Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chapter 52. Krishna, the Ranchur. When Muchukunda, the celebrated descendant of the Ikswaku dynasty, was favored by Lord Krishna, he circumambulated the Lord within the cave and then came out. And coming out of the cave, Muchukunda saw... There's someone who makes noise no matter what he does. Jodi Swar,
yes?
Is there any moment of the day that you're not making noise?
I don't know when I'm sleeping, but I'm probably snoring. But I sleep in a car, so it only bothers me. But I just wanted some light in here and some air.
Yeah, we noticed that. Everybody shared it. I'll try again. When Muchukunda, the celebrated descendant of the Ikswaku dynasty, was favored by Lord Krishna, he circumambulated the Lord within the cave and then came out. And coming out of the cave, Muchukunda saw that the human species had surprisingly been reduced in stature to pygmy size. Similarly, the trees had also been far reduced in size, and Muchukunda could immediately understand that the current age was Kali Yuga. So this is very interesting. Muchukunda was a very powerful king who lived in a previous yuga, and Muchukunda had power by which he could travel to higher planetary systems. Therefore, the demigods, they have their, who live in the higher planetary systems, they have their competitors, the asuras, the demoniac personalities, who are trying to, who are always in war with them. So Muchukunda was engaged to fight on the side of the demigods. He was kept there for a very, very long time, and Indra, the king of the demigods, would never let him go. And again, Muchukunda wanted to stop the fight, and Indra kept on pushing him and harassing him to somehow or other keep on fighting. Finally, the demigods, they let him go. So then they asked what benediction he wanted for all the fighting that he did. So the benediction that he asked for was that he would have the power to burn to ashes just with his glance anyone who would wake him up. I guess some of us can relate to that. I myself can. His idea was that if Indra comes again, and if Indra tries to wake me up, I'll just burn him with my eyes. So Indra will leave me alone. That was his idea. However, it was arranged by Krishna that another person was the one to wake Muchukunda up, and a demoniac personality who was burned to ashes by Muchukunda. And that's another story. After that whole pastime took place, Muchukunda had the darshan of Krishna, and subsequently Muchukunda left the cave, only to see that people had become very small and that the trees had become very small. And it is said Kali Yuga had begun. He could understand. So it's interesting, because we don't realize that, but that in previous times people were much taller, trees were taller, everything was bigger in size, and in this age of Kali everything shrinks. The age of Kali has started 5,000 years ago, so we understand that more than 5,000 years ago there was a very different world. We don't think like that. When modern people are looking at history, they assume that it has always been more or less like it was now, and that people were always like this. We have a whole concept which is based on our modern archaeological findings. But archaeology is a very speculative science, because many assumptions are there. If you break a house and if you dig up a teacup from the house, would it be easy to reconstruct the life of the people that were living in there? I'm talking here in the street, right? In this street. Would it be easy? I guess it would not be. Although we know the kind of people that would live in there, still it would be hard. If you didn't know them, it would be very hard to just buy the remnants of their house. But we are happily speculating about remnants of millions of years ago, or whatever, hundreds and thousands of years ago, to and reconstruct a whole reality around it. And it's no problem, because people from that time don't talk back. So we can basically make up anything, and who will argue? So the Vedic concept of history is very, very different, as we are seeing. The Vedic concept of history is that 5,000 years ago, Kali Yuga began. Prior to Kali Yuga, people and nature was much larger in size. It may not have started exactly 5,000 years ago. There was also a transition period, a sandhya, it's called, the joint period between the yugas. But still, if we go back maybe 20, 30,000 years, then we can expect that people were much larger. Their duration of life was much longer. It is said that people would live 1,000 years. Now, people could live up to 100 years, then they could live up to 1,000 years in that particular age. So it's interesting, because in the Old Testament you also find Methuselah, who is very old. You do find such kind of something.
Noah.
Noah was also very old.
Yeah, Noah, 900.
So, was he from Norway?
the guy with the boat, you know.
Yeah, that's like.
Yeah.
Anyway, just we understand that the Puranas. This is Puranic history. Purana means actually history, or the old. And we can see that Puranic history is giving a totally different perspective on reality. Maybe modern man would be inclined to write it off as mythology, but rest assured that that within 100 years from now, whatever we think today will be considered very primitive. Now we laugh at Copernicus and the time that the earth was flat. Now that's a joke. Did people really believe the earth was flat? Come on. You know, they really believed that. Scientists believed that. They believed all kinds of things. You have this Bishop Usher, who was a very scientific, intellectual man in his time, maybe 15, 1600s. And he was calculating on the basis of the Bible, assigning time to everything, that Adam and Eve were driven out of paradise. No, out of paradise. About just, I think it was 5000 BC, something like that. That's quite amazing. And they said, oh, the universe is, that's the origin of the universe. It's about universe about 5,000 BC, it begins. Well, that's like so primitive. If you look at Vedic concept, it is like 4.8 billion years. Modern Big Bang theory says 10 billion years. Well, when you say 5 billion or 10 billion, that's sort of within the billions. But then somebody comes with 5,000 BC. But that was taken very serious. And it stood for a few hundred years. It was accepted for a few hundred years, this Bishop Usher concept of the history. So it's very interesting how such conceptions could be there for a few hundred years, And people just believe it as, like, yeah, that's the way it is. Now we look at it like, come on, how was it possible? How could they possibly believe like that? So in the light of that, we should not just so quickly in our mind dismiss such Vedic descriptions of history. We should understand that we are preconditioned by everything we've heard in school, in the newspapers, and so on. And we're convinced that this is it. But the fact of the matter is that still modern man knows only very little about reality. Very little, actually. That is the fact of the matter. And science has since long given up on the fact to uncover the truth. Right? Science is now more into application. Whatever works. In other words, we manipulate nature a little bit and we get electronics, and that's what we're more interested in, and trying to figure out what is the actual origin of things, or what is the truth of nature or of history. All these things are now not so sure. So the Puranas are not from mundane source. There are two types of knowledge. It is said there is Avarohapanta and Arohapanta. Avarohapanta is descending knowledge, knowledge that comes down from higher authority. And Arohapanta is ascending knowledge. So we start in ignorance and try to figure it out. We look up to the sky and think, what's going on there? We put Hubble in the sky and we think we know something more. But still, it is surprising what is going on. So in this way, it's it's important to put a question mark behind modern scientific knowledge, because it's maybe not as sure as it is presented to us. That is important. And then Vedic literature comes with a totally different conception of reality. But actually, there are many, many awkward things going on that cannot be explained very well. For example, in Mexico, they have these pillars with these pyramids with huge stone blocks, right? And then they have put them all together and they filled the seams with hot metal, right? Or with tightly filled with metal. And even today, to do such a thing would be very difficult. Modern engineers would have a hard time to build such a building if they could afford it. With modern equipment, that wouldn't be very easy to do at all. It would be a major, major endeavor. So how did they do it? What technology did they have? It's just a mystery. There's no real answer. So like that, so many mysteries. I was introduced to Sanatani's mother, and she had been in India and visited Vrindavan and also Jaipur. And in Jaipur, they also saw Yantar Mantar. So this Yantar Mantar is an interesting thing. There are a few of these Yantar Mantars in India, and one in Delhi, one in Jaipur. They are Vedic observatories, and they were used to calculate the position of various planets and movements of the sun and so on. And quite an elaborate arrangement. There's like staircases and arches, and the sun is falling in shadows, or columns in a certain formation, a certain row where they can see this and this star should now, should at such and such date be at this column, and then it should so much time later be at the next column. And like, I saw an interesting documentary about Stonehenge. And this documentary about Stonehenge was showing how how there is this formation of rock columns. And that this formation of rock columns was the same as the formation of columns in Yantar Mantar, the same distances in scale, in terms of scale. So they made a connection. And they said, yes, Stonehenge was an observatory. Yeah. Then the camera took us to Mexico, and they took us to a pyramid in Mexico, and they began to show us pictures of the pyramid, and they showed us the drawings of the pyramid, and they showed that the drawings on the outside of the pyramids, carved in the stone, were drawings of different gods. They asked local tradition, which gods are these? And they gave different names, Mexican names, and they pointed out at some forms that were of the rain god. Right? Then the camera went to South India, to South Indian temples, and filmed the decorations on South Indian temples, and saw that they were the same. So again, Mexico, they showed South India, and they saw, hey, the same gods. And they inquired from the local people, this particular god that is on this stone, which one is it? And they said, the rain god. And in Mexico, it was also the rain god. So that was very interesting, because it appeared that there was a cultural connection between Mexico and South India, which at that time was kind of a long distance by ship and so on. But there clearly appeared to be a connection. Then they had, then in Mexico, on one of these pyramids, they took us to a terrace, and on the terrace there was again the same formation of columns. And we thought, like, again, an observatory, and all of them the same. However, when they looked at these observatories and they did calculations, then they noticed that, they could figure out which planets they were supposed to indicate, the positions of which planet, but it wasn't completely correct. It was off. Yeah? So then they made a calculation, and they calculated how many years back it would have been correct. And when they were calculating how many years back it would have been correct, they came to 17,000 years for both the pyramid in Mexico as well as as Stonehenge. So it's very interesting. It unravels the mystery of Stonehenge, but that's not all. It also shows that 17,000 years ago there was a common world culture, and not the American one of Mickey Mouse and blue jeans and t-shirts, but another one, the one of a Vedic culture, a culture where Vedic knowledge was spread all over the world 17,000 years ago. So it is very interesting when we go into these kind of things. For example, Indra Jumna Maharaj always comes with good stories. That's his expertise. Some say that he puts a little chutney, a little sauce when he tells the stories. But anyway, he comes with this story. He said he was in Russia, and in Russia, our devotees were under investigation from a government committee to see, you know, if they were bona fide or this or that. You know? So there was an important professor, and they suggested that Indra Jumna Maharaj would try and meet the professor and speak with the professor. So he met with this professor, and then he had an interesting conversation with the professor. The professor began and said, well, Maharaj told him first. He said, actually, you know, we are not a new movement, a new religious movement. We are an ancient tradition. Our roots are in the Vedic culture in India. And the professor goes, we know all that. We know all that. That's nothing new. He said, that's not the issue. He said, the issue is whether the Vedic culture began in India or in the Volga region. It's like in the Volga region. It's in Russia. There's a river, the Volga. The Volga.
It's a river.
Yeah, it's a river. And there's the Volga Valley and a whole region in the Volga region in Russia. Yes, the professor said, yes. Have you heard of the Russian Veda? So Maharaj goes, Russian Veda? And he goes, yes. Have you heard of the Russian Veda? So yes, the Russian Veda. Said, yes. The Russian Veda, he said, is as old as Russia itself. The hero of the Russian Veda is a personality called Kishan. Wait a minute. Kishan? Wait a minute. What's going on? Kishan. That's straight from India. Kishan. That's an Indian name. He said, yes, there's a story how this hero, Kishan, in his youth, defeated a great snake. Now it's getting plagiarism, you know. This is too much, you know. Right? I mean, plagiarism, they stole it straight from India. Anyway, his point is that as old as Russia, there was a book like that. Right? And he used to say, and there were princes. Princes who would protect Russia. And these princes, they would whisper on their arrows, and the arrows would never miss their target. Well, if you read the Mahabharata, you read how the heroes, they were using astras, they were using subtle weapons, and they spoke mantras. And by mantra, their arrows had mystic power and would never miss the target. It sounds pretty similar. And then Indrajumna Maharaj is writing about this temple in Baku, which according to its own history, worship has been going on in this temple in Baku for thousands of years, and it is a temple dedicated to the fire god. There is natural gas which is coming out of the earth and it's burning. So the temple has double walls, and the fire is burning in between the walls, and it's coming out at the top, like flames are coming out at the top, and then inside the temple there's a deity of Agnidev. And up to the day of today, the pujaris are still from India, and the worship is still going on. So like this is Baku, just, you know, what is it, Turkmenistan probably?
Or,
Azerbaijan or some country like that. You know, one of those places. Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan.
Yeah, so if you hear these kind of things, it's very interesting, because then we see that things are not as cut dry as we learn in the boring history books in school, and that there was like a whole common history and a great connection. And these kind of findings, they support the Vedic view that once Vedic culture was spread all over the world, and that all over the world this kind of worship, a similar type of worship was going on. Vedic culture included the worship of many demigods. And that was going on here also in Norway. The pre-Christian history of Norway has so many demigods and personalities, and it's not difficult to see the connection between ancient Norwegian culture and Greek and Roman culture, and not difficult to see the connection between Roman culture and Indian culture. There's all this. The leading god, his weapon is a thunderbolt. Yeah? He's the leader. That's Indra. Indra has the thunderbolt for his weapon. Yeah? It is Zeus, right? It is, what is he again?
Thor.
Thor, Thor and Donor and so on. He's everywhere in all the cultures. So again, we see this worldwide connection of a culture. And this culture has now been covered by the modern Christian culture. But actually once Vedic culture was the predominant culture on the entire planet before the earth became splintered up. So these kind of things are interesting. Interesting, and we can see the modern worldview is not what it appears to be. And then you get Michael Cremo and with his book Forbidden Archaeology and gets into all the findings that are not supposed to be there. Human footprints that are like a million years old when there were supposed to be only dinosaurs or something like that. So how is this possible?
Can I have one question? Can Atlantida be the Vedic...
Atlantis
can be Vedic center.
Yeah, you know, such things are also possible, yes. Some people are always interested in Atlantis and Mu or whatever
it's called.
Because
in this period, the civilization, they're talking it was the most, the best technology and...
Vedic culture was in India. It had its roots in India. But definitely the culture in the world was spread more. In the Vedic literature we don't find a big Atlantis description. That's not there. No. We do have an Indus Valley civilization, which now, you know, this whole Morapan culture, which is now being uncovered. Because with satellites they're seeing the bridge to Lanka and also the river in the Indus Valley, and which previously wasn't seen, and they can, and so now they have more or less the course of the Indus, and they begin to go along that route and digging, and they're finding huge cities, and some are also dated like 20,000 years old. So it's like there is definitely more to history than what we know. Therefore, we should not so quickly write off the Puranic information that in previous ages people were much larger, had a much longer duration of life, and so on. Of course, those things are ultimately external. And more important is that we are understanding that whether people were 6 meters tall or whether they were very small, like they're today, maximum 2 meters or less, that doesn't matter, because ultimately the same soul was in sight. So it doesn't matter. Maybe there was a different world, but the goal of life was still the same. The problems of life were still the same. Birth, death, old age and disease was also existing then. And the solution is still the same. A spiritual process. A process of understanding that the soul doesn't belong in the material world, but belongs in the eternal relation with the Supreme Lord. And that the goal of life is to reconnect. The interesting part in looking at history is when we see that in history there's actually so much of that. You know, history is like very rich in spiritual tradition. The time on earth that we have a predominantly atheistic culture is very short. It's a very short time span in history. We're just in it now. A predominantly atheistic culture. Yeah? That's just now. Otherwise, as far back as we can see spiritual a spiritually based culture. And Vedic literature takes that back a lot further in modern history. And modern man tends to think, when modern man looks at the past, modern man tends to think that just coincidentally, just somehow or other, it coincidentally so, now it happens to be so that human beings know more than they've ever known before. Isn't it? That's what we think. That's what modern people think. Somehow or other, it's amazing. We just live at this time that mankind knows more than they've ever known at any point in time in history. Amazing. What an amazing time we're living in, if you think about it. Far out. Yeah? We just happen to live at that time when mankind knows more than they ever knew before. But is that really a fact? We don't know how to whisper on arrows, mantras. We don't know how to heal with herbs. I heard that there is a herb that if you touch it to a tooth that is infected, that immediately the bacteria leave and immediately the infection is down. And I was lying in a dental chair, and the dentist, it was a surgeon, and he was removing surgically one tooth, and I was heavily drugged out. It was like crunch, crunch, you know, I heard like crack, crunch, crack, crunch, and I just, my head was being dragged and people were holding my head, and I was thinking, oh my God, if only I would have known the name of the herb, you know. I was just thinking in the chair, thinking, what was the name of that herb again, you know, what was it? Yeah? If only I would have known the name of the herb, I wouldn't be in this chair, you know. No. So I'm not so convinced that just now we are at the peak of our knowledge. Yes.
Even if you knew that name also, I think it should be some Puranic, some name. So
yeah.
It will not be the same name as now.
Okay, maybe I'll find some Kaviraj who would still know the name. And go. It would be a good thing to have. No? Such a herb.
Yeah, still in my village, people use herbs many different.
Yeah, yeah.
Herbs.
In our village also. Yeah? And we are from Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan also. I saw in Vrindavan we had one chokidar, a guard, in the temple. And one day the man had a stroke, and we took him to some village, and there was a local brahmana who chanted some mantras, put some herbs, and touched him in various places in the body. The man stood up and walked away. I have seen.
You believe?
I seen with my own two eyes, brother. I seen. Yeah. Yeah. It's like such things are possible. And of course, we have the Pilia Janawala Shamasaki. And
I was cured by him.
He was cured. Yeah. I mean, I was cured.
It's a miracle.
Brothers, I can walk. I can see. I was cured. He was yellow and his t-shirt was white. And after the treatment, his t-shirt became yellow and he became perfectly white again. No, but he has a treatment and something with water and some.
No, you have to sit on the floor in your gamcha, and he bathes you with a hose. And then first he gives you a mango bark, and he murmurs some mantra.
Five, you have to go.
Into the bark.
Say it loud. Okay.
So then you start rubbing your body and your head, and with the water, all this yellow stuff comes out of your body.
Mm-hmm. Just start bringing out the prasad.
That is.
We'll talk and we'll keep in touch.
For jaundice.
Yeah.
Pilia.
Yeah. Also have the same experience actually in Jadavpur, Kolkata, nearby Kolkata. Yeah, I went to one of my cousins, he had a jaundice and he had a like big problem from UK. He couldn't like, you know, he couldn't have any solution. Then we went to India. Then just a Kaviraj, he did something like, you know, this and that, they like,
yeah.
Came out, and after 3 days, he's a very nice person, you know, like completely healthy.
Yeah.
It's like a miracle.
In Mayapur, they put a put a little thing in Bengal.
They put
a little thing on your head, like and that thing it grows, you know.
Yeah.
It grows
it's
like a garland,
and
it grows bigger and bigger, and then it falls down on your shoulders, and then gradually it has to fall over your shoulders and falls off your body, and then you're cured.
Yeah, it takes 3 days.
Hey, Rogan Chocha, he's also from Bangladesh.
Yeah, it's the same treatment, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
What is it made from?
This
plant in a bush.
Some sort of garland type of thing. Yeah.
It's kind of like
the stems.
And we had in Mayapur, we had just down the road, we had one man, snake bite, you know, cobra bite, right? He just immediately took the person, with ties on cloth around to the place where the person was bitten, take him there, he put his black stone on the wound, all this blood, black blood would come out. And then cured, he didn't die. We brought many people there.
Don't need serum.
Yeah. Many, seriously, I mean, we used such kind of people.
Also, well, my sister.
If you tell this to people in the West, they go, like, come on, but here we are. You know, I saw it many times. I mean, you are your sister. In India, everybody knows this thing.
But the problem is that there are some false cobras are there.
Of course, there's always business also is there.
Yeah.
Chaka lagbet. That is also going on.
False
cobras. Maybe there are even false cobras also.
False cobras, yeah, in the West we see made by plastic.
We even had a devotee in Denmark, Babylon. He was very good. He was a healer. He was very... very good until he got married and he got children and he lost his power. But he actually had, he cured me when I had sinus, like some infection in the arm from cooking, moving big pots and like. So the doctors, they didn't have anything, they just put the arm in a like
sling.
It's called the carpal tunnel syndrome.
Maybe, yes. So, I mean, they just said, leave it, you know, in peace for 2 weeks and just let it hang there, relax, like relaxing, waiting, you know. And after 2 weeks, I started using, immediately when I started using, you know, it becomes irritated, you know, and then immediately, you know, the problem. So I went to him and he just went, he had like a pendulum, so he just went like, sat there and it just went away like that.
He
said he moved some earth from my liver or wherever it was, and he moved earth, some subtle earth, to the arm because there was too much fire there, he said. All glorious too. But the thing was that
the conclusion is what counts.
It worked, yeah. So that was, in practice, it worked.
Yeah.
I didn't care.
And such things are now forgotten. So we think we know everything, but there's a lot of things that we forgot. It's like if you read in Sushruta Samhita, the Vedic, about medical science. You read when people broke their leg, they would put a bandage of herbs, and then it would show a red line where the fracture was, which I think is better than to be zapped under a machine, you know, which is like radioactive. It worked. Yeah, they were to be able to set the bone, to see how it's broken, set the bone. So they had a solution, but maybe better. but now I've forgotten.
Also, when I was a very small kid, like maybe 2 years or something, in my home, my father and some other people, they were carrying some rice, big sacks, maybe 80 kilos or something. And I was playing, I was running, I was just down that sack they were carrying, and they did not see me. They just, they wanted to put it there, and my ball, it did not break, but it just bent like this. So one of the healer, it's an old lady, she was using some oil and a little bit of hot oil. She made it, now it's perfect, straight. Yeah, it's okay now.
Boom.
So if everyone can please empty their cup of water, because there will be soup in it.
Yeah, it still looks pretty straight, huh? Up there, she did a good job.
Yeah. But she was a little bit nightmare for me, because I used to get pain when she tried to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what
it must have been.
I still remember, I was 2 years old, but I still remember some pictures. We have 20 minutes to fix everything.
But, you know, as I was trying to find you, I had help from the Google satellite. You know, when I came to Langudvine 1, it said, "You have arrived."
Yeah, that's so. So definitely, modern things are also doing amazing things, but some things still.
Yes, everyone they had a different cup, so we used to say.
Still, some things. See, it's like you see like modern people, you see like Stephen Hawking, you know, he's like so smart, and yet he's like so helpless in his wheelchair, and like cannot speak without a machine. So modern man needs a machine for everything. So they become more and more helpless, you know, without machines. Chip in your brain. And just a few years.
Because we are leaving for airport at 5:00, so if everyone can leave. I was actually thinking 4:30, because then we need to fix some pictures and do a lot of organization and stuff.